Good morning, everyone. I'm glad you came across campus or drove across town on this rainy morning, this day that feels more dreary than joyful on probably more than one level. Even so, I want to welcome us into a space of engagement and sing with energy, number two, in Sing the Journey. As we open up to this theme of a Mennonite in the Pentagon by Dr. Lisa Shirk, we'll introduce more about that in a little bit. The journey is long. Share our burden, come uplift us, bring us new life, give us peace. Come walk with us. Let's stand.
Come walk with us, and the journey is long. Come walk with us, the journey is long. Come walk with us, the journey is long. Come walk with us, the journey is long. The journey, the journey, 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 the journey is long.
On this long journey, there is tragedy at times. And yesterday was one of those days. We received an email, faculty and staff, and then today, by extension, students from Lana and I, of the death of Hannah Grieser Hochstetler. Hannah and her husband, Caleb, who graduated from here with a master's in business administration just spring 2016, and worked here in marketing and communications from 2013 to 2016. They were here for School for Leadership training. They're service adventure leaders in Mississippi. And after meeting with folks for several days, including the youth group from Harrisonburg Mennonite Church in the evening, returning to Mississippi, they were in a terrible automobile accident on 81 near Roanoke, and Hannah was killed, and Caleb pretty seriously injured, needing surgery. His parents are coming, either with him or coming, and you can only imagine the devastation. And so we've lit this candle today, calling us to prayerful presence with Hannah's family, with Caleb, with Caleb's family. And let's pause. Pray your heart's prayer for them in the silence. Jesus Christ, Son of God, have mercy. Lana and I will host a prayerful space in the Brunkmoss Lounge of the Campus Center lower level at 11:30 this morning. If you are available then and want to join us, please do. And if you want to join us for prayer at another time, let us know after chapel or send us an email. Let us enter into Scripture, Scripture selected by Lisa for this morning's focus.
Matthew 5, 43-48. You have heard that it was said, love your neighbor and hate your enemy. But I tell you, love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you, that you may be children of your God. God causes the sun to rise on the evil and the good, and sends rain on the righteous and the unrighteous. If you love those who love you, what reward will you get? Are not even the tax collectors doing that? And if you greet only your own people, what are you doing more than others? Do not even pagans do that? Be perfect, therefore, just as your heavenly Father is perfect.
So with us today is Dr. Lisa Shirk, and she's North American Research Director for the TODA Institute for Global Peace and Policy Research, Senior Policy Advisor with the Alliance for Peacebuilding, and Research Professor at the Center for Justice and Peacebuilding here at EMU. In 2015, Lisa finished a three-year project coordinating a global network to write a handbook on human security, a civil military police curriculum, and set of 40 peacebuilding case studies on local ownership in security. There's another paragraph that names so many connections and honors and awards that one person, after receiving the email yesterday about this chapel, said, wow, when does she have time for hobbies, right? I know Lisa does, she's an artist as well. We're glad that you're with us this morning. Please come and share what's on your heart.
In our corner of the universe, this is a week of reflection on the life of Martin Luther King. And today in Washington, D.C., there is an inauguration of a new U.S. administration. So these are days of great importance. Martin Luther King wrote that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends toward justice, and we have just sung about the journey being long. Some days, more than others, that arc seems mighty long. Today, we say goodbye to President Obama. One of the things he said that will stay with me is that the moral arc of the universe does not bend on its own toward justice. Each of us here decides whether we will add our weight to that arc, whether we will pull with the force of our lives, and whether we will push the arc with the power of love until it bends. This morning, I'll talk about 10 years of work to promote the concept of human security to the U.S. military and NATO in Europe. For me, I have tried to bend this arc by building relationships with people in the military and by providing training and education to them. Many Mennonites shun the military. For some Mennonites, shunning is an avoidance of people with whom you disagree. Shunning means not acknowledging or talking to people who are different. I've never understood how Mennonites justify this behavior of shunning with this text from Matthew. In Matthew, Jesus suggests we walk toward those with whom we disagree and those whom we are different. We greet them. We ask questions. We recognize their humanity. For me, this is what God's security strategy looks like. It's not just a moral strategy, it's also an effective strategy. We have a number of military veterans studying here at EMU, and I think we must welcome them. We must engage them. We must explore together the problems with warfare, as well as the problems of the world that demand real answers. We live in an age of terror. Terror is the use of violence or the threats of violence against civilians to achieve a political goal. Civilians are dying at ever higher rates from terrorism. Civilians die from attacks either by individuals who are called lone wolves or by small groups committed to terrorism. Civilians die from drone strikes and state warfare that inflicts terror on people. We have a common interest with the military in reducing terrorism and war. It is difficult to imagine what Jesus might have said about terrorism. Would he have still said the words recorded in Matthew, "Love your enemies and pray for those who persecute you in an age of terror"? I think so, because Jesus lived also in an age of terror. I believe that loving our enemies requires us to see their humanity and not to accept their violence. We can and should denounce violence. We must attempt to prevent the violence. So loving our enemies doesn't mean ignoring them or not naming them. We should always be ready to help, first of all, the victims who are hurt from the enemies, and then show the humanity and kindness also to those with whom we disagree. This week, over 30 Jewish community centers across the United States received simultaneous bomb threats. My mother-in-law, my husband Bill Goldberg's mother, works at the Baltimore Jewish Community Center, and she and her colleagues had to evacuate with the Jewish children in the daycare center there. Terrorism is nothing new to Jewish communities. Those of you who have taken any history courses here at EMU know that terrorism against Jews has a long history. And we also know from our history courses that terrorism against African Americans has been commonplace throughout US history. In the last decade, white terrorism against Muslims, Jews, and people of color have posed far more of a threat to Americans than foreign-based terrorism. In fact, the statistics from the FBI say that we are 7 times more likely to be hurt as Americans by white extremists rather than by Muslim extremists. On the morning of September 11, the community gathered here at EMU and we realized the world was forever changed. We've marked history with names, we've gone through the Middle Ages, the Age of Enlightenment, the Information Age. It would be hard to deny we are now living in an age of terror, a period marked and shaped by random acts of terror against civilians. Despite 15 years of nonstop war aiming at stopping terrorism, the pace of terror is escalating. Terror has become something we hear about every week. Individuals, small groups, networks, and nations recruit, plan, and carry out attacks on civilians. As this diagram shows, as the war on terror has escalated and our country has poured more and more money into the war on terrorism, terrorism itself has escalated. And so the trajectory follows each other. There is a correlation between the more we fight and the more groups and individuals who commit themselves to using terror. At the Pentagon, military experts also are realizing this same pattern. Military experts realize that the more the military force they use to try to stop terror, the more individuals are recruited to join terrorist groups. Some military experts estimate that every bomb dropped creates 100 new recruits for terrorist groups. People in the military understand that terrorism is caused in large part by political conflicts. Peace and security requires an understanding of these root causes. Military generals, including the U.S. Secretary of Defense, General Mattis, who's being confirmed today, recognize that terrorism is a political problem and needs political solutions. It is military generals who have stopped us from going to war with Iran. They have argued to Congress that diplomacy is a far more effective strategy than war. As the war in Iraq was escalating in the mid-2000s, the Pentagon and military schools across the country began to reach out to people like me to figure out how to overcome terrorism through non-military means. For most of the last 10 years, I have driven every week back and forth to Washington, D.C., to Quantico Marine Corps, to the U.S. Army War College, just up 81, to West Point Military Academy in New York, and to the Pentagon, to talk to U.S. military leaders about how to respond to the threat from Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, and other groups that target civilians. I have hugged my children goodbye and boarded planes to Afghanistan, Pakistan, and Iraq, where I met with military leaders to encourage them to listen more closely to local communities. This is an unusual job for a Mennonite. People ask me, how did this come about? So let me back up. Mennonites take the passage from Matthew that we read today very seriously. In fact, I think it separates us from most other religious Christian denominations, our focus on that text. Mennonites have suffered from violence directed at us, we have suffered for resisting war, and we have devoted our time and resources to peace. As a Mennonite, I was exposed to human rights work and peace protest marches. In 1991, I went to Washington, D.C. with others from Conrad Grebel College, a Mennonite college in Canada. And this is a photo of my friend Wendy Chapeldick, who is the mother of EMU Hannah Chapeldick, and me opposing the war in Iraq in 1991, a long time ago. I did a lot of protesting outside of the Pentagon before I started going inside the Pentagon. The war in Iraq in the early 1990s set the stage for the wars that have raged throughout the Middle East and Afghanistan. It also set the stage for this rapid increase in terrorism. In 1990, Iraqi dictator Saddam Hussein invaded Kuwait so that they could lay an oil pipeline to a port. This country has been fighting over oil pipelines, as we know from Standing Rock, for a long time. Sometimes we support the pipelines and sometimes we oppose them. Saddam Hussein was a personality cult in Iraqi society. He was a businessman who loved to be on television. His name was written everywhere. You couldn't turn on the radio and not hear his name. Saddam Hussein was arrogant, insecure, and focused on himself. Anyone who criticized Saddam Hussein was punished. Insecure and arrogant leaders are dangerous. Hussein killed thousands of Kurdish people, a minority in Iraq. When the U.S. threatened to go to war with Iraq, it was predictable that an insecure, emotionally unstable leader like Saddam Hussein would lead his country into war. What do we do with men like Saddam Hussein or the groups of terror lovers who followed him? The top generals in the Pentagon have one consistent message. There is no military solution. There is no amount of bombing, no magical number of assassinations or killings that will establish peace. Going to protest marches increased my awareness of political issues, but opposing war and begging leaders to stop the war from outside these buildings seemed futile. As a college student, I wanted to have real policy alternatives. I wanted to have the expertise to argue for peace on strategic grounds and not only moral grounds. I liked the passage from the Bible about being wise as serpents and innocent as doves. I went to graduate school and studied conflict analysis and resolution. I worked on local conflicts in the US and Canada, and I took every opportunity to travel and worked in other countries. I read lots and lots of books on peace, on war, and political strategy. And I made many trips to the Middle East. And I talked with people working on the ground in those countries about what peace would require. When I was in Iraq in 2005, these development workers who were actually had come to the Summer Peacebuilding Institute here at EMU told me that the young men in Iraqi villages have little to look forward to: unemployment, humiliation, war. The insurgents find them easy to recruit. Development work, they thought, partnerships with communities offering job opportunities and a chance of earning respect and dignity in ways other than a gun, would be far more effective security strategies. They said security doesn't land in a helicopter, it grows from the ground up. The women in Iraq, in Erbil, in Kurdistan told me, do Americans know they have made the situation worse? That there was no Al-Qaeda here before the war, but now our cities are full of terrorists? Why do they focus on hunting down the terrorists rather than on human security? It's a backward strategy. It only escalates the number of terrorists and helps the insurgents in their recruitment. I also learned the cost of terrorism personally. My closest colleagues in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Pakistan were all brutally assassinated by terror groups in three separate situations while they were providing humanitarian assistance, documenting human rights, and negotiating between tribes. Two of these colleagues, Glenn Lapp and Tom Fox, had been students here at Eastern Mennonite University. Like many in the Pentagon, I became convinced that there are no quick military solutions. I saw the fantasy of firepower as a Hollywood illusion. I looked at case studies and research that proved that political solutions through negotiation were far more effective, quicker, and less expensive than military solutions. In talking and teaching with people in the military, I found that there was significant common ground. First of all, I realized that students at West Point and students at EMU are a lot more like each other than students at EMU are like students at UVA. At West Point and EMU, the students are focused on service to others. We're ready to make sacrifices. We look forward to contributing to the world rather than making a lot of money. And we're willing to take a lot of risks. At the Pentagon, I was invited to give keynote addresses at several conferences on what is known as complex non-traditional warfare and threats. What this means is that today the Pentagon does not see the greatest threat coming from other strong states or countries with big weapons. The greatest threats are coming from small groups of people, individuals, and global threats like climate change, disease, and the spread of small arms. In the past, U.S. national security focused on protecting U.S. territory, but now the threat is to U.S. civilians anywhere, at home and abroad. And our safety and security depend on the safety and security of people in other places. In the halls of the Pentagon, posters announce conferences on climate change as the greatest national security threat of the future. It announces conferences on contagious disease and on the sale of small weapons. Mennonites and people in the Pentagon actually have a lot more in common than we do with many of the other people who live in our country who want to carpet bomb as a security strategy, because many people in the Pentagon understand that that is not going to work. The wars in Iraq go on, and military leaders started realizing there's not only no military solution, but there's this problem of not listening to local people. Military leaders such as Admiral Blair argue that the military should never be used against civilians, and why it should only be used to protect civilians and to protect democracy. So instead of counterterrorism, which is the belief that big guns, intimidation, and shock and awe can deter people from using violence, they started talking more and more about counterinsurgency, softer approaches, where we try to win the hearts and minds. One of the most interesting visits to the Pentagon I had was being part of a debate between two parts of the military, one that supported counterterrorism and the other that was against it and wanted to use counterinsurgency. And you realize how much infighting there is and disagreement within the military. People in the military started asking for courses on how do we protect civilians and how do we really move from military and police officers being seen as predators that people run away from to protectors that people would want to run toward. In other parts of the world, people were reaching the same conclusion that I was, that just blaming the military and pushing them away is not the solution to our security challenges, but building relationships, providing education and training. So what I have found now, that there are dozens of small peace-building organizations, many of them motivated by faith, around the world doing the same work of engaging the police and the military directly. And the place where this is happening the most is in the Philippines, where, again, several graduates of EMU went back and have started training the Filipino military in peace-building skills, in conflict assessment, how to understand the root causes of conflict, and in peace building and conflict management. And one of the colonels, who was an early person who asked for the training from the Mindanao Peacebuilding Institute in the Philippines, actually now has been promoted to Brigadier General, the highest rank in the country. And his promotion was based primarily on the fact that he was able to solve conflicts through negotiation and diplomacy rather than through the use of force. In the Congo, in the Democratic Republic of the Congo, other human rights and peacebuilding groups are teaching soldiers about how to not commit sexual violence, how to protect civilians. In Guatemala, there are security dialogues led by peacebuilding organizations that involve the military, the intelligence, the police, religious leaders, labor unions, artists, everyone in the country sort of coming together and talking about what would security look like in Guatemala. This is our planet. From space, there are no borders. The safety and security of the people on this planet are connected. The U.S. cannot have security while ignoring the security of people in other parts of this planet. This is the single most important principle of security, and I think some of the top leaders in the Pentagon understand this. Mennonites have been criticized for not flying the American flag, and I don't think we've been clear enough about our critique is not that we don't love the United States. Our critique is that we love everybody on this planet, and we feel that as Christians we are called to look at this whole beautiful planet and all the people on it. So sometimes I think we shouldn't just not fly an American flag, we need to be flying a flag with the whole globe on it, a flag that the image of the earth reminds people that we do not have love only for people in this country, but that our love extends beyond the boundaries of the U.S., and that we have a love for and loyalty to all of God's creations. Mennonites should be clear about what we oppose, but we should not just oppose war or oppose terrorism and violent extremism. We must also be clear what we support. I think we can only legitimately criticize leadership if we have a clear idea on what they should do as an alternative. We have to move only from protest to proposal, clearly laying out pragmatic solutions to problems. So in closing, Martin Luther King says, "The question is not whether we will be extremists, but what kind of extremists will we be? Will we be extremists for hate or for love? Will we be extremists for the preservation of injustice or the extension of justice?" On this day, some people are celebrating and others are suggesting that we need to hold fast to values articulated in another vision for the United States. In our America, all people are equal. Love wins. Black lives matter. Immigrants and refugees are welcome. Disabilities are respected. Women are in charge of their bodies. People and planet are valued over profit, and diversity is celebrated. And these values are as true in Standing Rock as they are in Syria, in Baltimore to Burma, from the streets of Chicago to the streets of Chile. And finally, I want to invite any of you students out there to consider the cross-cultural next fall to the Middle East. My husband, Bill Goldberg, and I are leading this cross-cultural, and it really will be focused on the question of peace in the Middle East, so that we can better understand the dynamics happening in our world and what are the root causes of so much conflict and strife. We have only a few spaces left, so please hurry. But we want to focus on a number of things that are relevant to EMU students. We're going to be focusing on environmental sustainability, inner religious understanding, trauma, and peace building. So if you have any questions, please see me. Thank you.
So I appreciate so much you bringing your expertise and insights. I remember a chapel talk that you gave 10 years ago, maybe, where you also used the image of the globe viewed from outer space, and you said, "Where are the boundaries? The boundaries are human-made," and I've remembered that all these years. One of the strongest images from a chapel talk, and again, you brought that to us and meant much more.